The Westwood One Podcast Network.
Never quit radio. All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ Podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit Podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Team Never Quit Podcast is sponsored by Navy Federal Credit Union. Opening a certificate from Navy Federal Credit Union is a great way to grow your savings for goals like paying for college or a down payment on a new home. Just imagine all the possibilities. Learn more at NavyFederal.org/save. Federally insured by NCUA. What's going on, Team Never Quit? Welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit Podcast. My name's Andrew, joined today by Melanie, and we're doing things different because we're still in this, you know, coronavirus social lockdown thing. And we actually recorded this episode a few weeks back, and we're doing our intros and outros now virtually via a Zoom. So if it doesn't sound the clearest, it's because we're doing things remotely and doing our parts to stay safe. But today we've got someone super special to us, Taya Kyle. Melanie, are you as excited as I am?
Yes, I am. Taya is one of my dearest friends. She's like a sister to me, and I truly love her. I love that she got to come down. I would have never in a million years thought that a few days later, the whole world would turn inside out. I mean, what's happened since I saw her just a few weeks ago is crazy, but I'm so glad that she got the chance to come down and record this, and it's a great episode.
It really is. And this, you have probably heard Taya speak. You've probably written some of the beautiful words she writes on her social media account. But I'll tell you right now, this interview, she talks about some things that I've never heard her share before. And it's just a beautiful message that she shares this week. And I can't wait for you guys to hear this episode. Before we jump into Taya's interview, we got a Patreon question of the day from Kurt. And Kurt says, I know that it might be against the law to answer this in Texas, but I will ask anyways. If you had to live any place else in the world but Texas, where would you live?
So Marcus and I have talked about this a lot. The only place I've ever considered living other than Texas, I was born in Louisiana, so I've thought about living in Louisiana and Hawaii. Problem is, Marcus hates Hawaii. He cannot stand
really
Hawaii. So that's absolutely out of the question, but he can't stand it. His time he served there, I mean, I get it. That was the, you know, what happened when he went to war, when he was stationed there, was the worst account of his life. So just brings back bad memories from him. But for me, I think it's such a beautiful place, and even bringing it back to like to Red Wing, which happened when Marcus was stationed in Hawaii, they've done a beautiful job with honoring the guys there. There's a beautiful park named after Red Wing, and they've got memorials, and it's just with and without the whole military thing, I love it. I think it's a beautiful place, and I can feel God there. Like, it's just one of those natural beauty that, I don't know, it brings out a spiritual side to me. I like it.
I've never been to Hawaii. I'm gonna when
Marcus would never live anywhere else.
Yeah, Texas through and through, right?
We've talked about it multiple times, and he's like, nope, Texas it is.
That's awesome. I wouldn't mind living in somewhere like, you know, Wyoming or Montana, where it's just super, super beautiful. I like the mountains, but I've never been to Hawaii. So maybe when the world resumes as normal, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, it's a place that everybody's got to see once. And there's so many different islands too, like in Hawaii, that they're all very different. So go explore.
Kurt, thanks so much for your question. If you guys want exclusive access to the show and bonus behind the scenes content, you should make sure you join us on Patreon. You get exclusive access to behind the scenes content, access to the Patreon community, where you can support others like yourself, and you get rare access to Morgan, Marcus, all of our incredible guests. We also do bonus episodes there. So if you wanted to kind of hear some of the behind the scenes stories and things like that, we share them on Patreon. You can join us there at patreon.com/teamneverquit. Let's get to that interview with Taya. All right, guys, I got to show some love to one of our podcast sponsors, Fiverr.com. If you never heard of Fiverr.com before, you're missing out. Basically, they connect you with freelance talent. And sometimes when it comes to accomplishing a project like putting on a podcast, there's a lot of moving parts. Show artwork, editing, you name it. And doing that by yourself can be really, really tough. That's where Fiverr comes in. These guys connect you with hundreds of thousands of freelancers who offer tons of digital services. They got things like graphic design, copywriting, web programming, film editing, so much more. And there's a lot of funny stuff on there too. Like, just jump on Fiverr.com right now. I promise you, you can just browse there for days. And the things that you can get for $5 are pretty awesome. We actually had an illustration done of myself, Morgan, and Marcus for our YouTube cover. So if you want to check that out, go to youtube.com, search Team Never Quit Podcast. You can actually look at our illustration of myself, Morgan, and Marcus that we had done. And we got that done for no more than $30, and we had it done in a week. It was crazy. The cool thing about the Fiverr website is it's easy to kind of search exactly for what you're looking for. You can kind of pick the person based on price, the number of reviews they have, even the timeline of how fast you need something done. They're really, really awesome. All you have to do is go to Fiverr.com. They're going to hook you up with 10% off your first order. You can use our code TNQ. It's so easy. Find all the digital services you need in one place. That's Fiverr.com, code TNQ. Again, that's Fiverr.com, code TNQ.
I wanted to ask you something, and then I think I know the answer, so okay. Maybe not. There's been a movie made with mm-hmm. you portrayed in it. Before that ever happened, if you wanted to have someone play you, who would you have wanted?
Okay, so that's a great question. And when Clint Eastwood actually asked me that question, and I was like, man, I never really think about it, but it has crossed my mind once in a while, right? And mm-hmm. I was like, Sandra Bullock is the person that I think of, right? Because she's the girl next door. She can be goofy. She can be serious. She can be like gentle and loving, that kind of thing. And so I felt like that was a dynamic. And he's like, okay, well, and he was like, oh, that's not, it's not. He's like, well, first of all, this is like, at the time, we're going to have a much younger Taya than she was. And she's also very expensive for a film, yeah. right? Like, she's so, yeah, it wasn't
going to
work.
But she's so good.
She is good. But so it probably would have competed.
I remember when the filming was going on and yeah. you and I were texting about this and you had texted me someone and I at the time didn't know who it was and I had to Google them and it was someone that you thought would be good for you.
Okay.
And every time I see her now, yeah. I think of you.
Who is it?
Anna Kendrick.
Oh, that's because a lot of people think that they, yes. I hear that a lot. Yes.
And I mean, just laugh. Looks and in personality wise mm-hmm. on film
yeah.
is a lot like you.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? We're doing the American Wife. It looks like anyway, sort of a made for TV film kind of series thing or whatever. If in a perfect world, I'm really hopeful. I'd like to do sort of a series with other wives. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be super fascinating to show their stories in a similar fashion.
That would be awesome.
I mean, I've kind of, it'll be unique no matter how we do it and it'll be good. But mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see who they pick for that. I haven't even really thought about it yet.
Oh my gosh.
She'd be good probably.
Anna Kendrick has to be you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a connection?
No. But anyone who has a connection to
Anna Kendrick, please call in.
I mean, even in her Hilton commercials, I see her and I'm like, that's Taya.
Okay. I need to Google that.
Yeah.
Probably when she sings. Is that what you see? Why are you laughing, Melanie?
Because I'm pretty sure you and I sound the same if we're singing.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
That's funny. Okay, so do y'all have a Mad Minute question?
What's the craziest fashion trend you've ever rocked?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so in high school, I had these Converse, but they were a special edition Batman. So they were black Converse high tops with yellow like insignias all over them with the bat in them. I don't know that that's crazy, but that stands out as one of my favorites. I was on the fence if I should even give them away. But, you know, I feel like I've done pretty much all of the I've taken all those opportunities to be adventurous in my fashion.
Bangs?
Oh, I've done the high ratted up bangs. Not super high. I wouldn't say like 80s
white rain.
Film. Not definitely not white rain. No, I wasn't that far out of the box. But I feel like I like to do, you know what I really want to do is I love hats. I'm a hat freak, but they have these hats now that it's like a top hat, but for a woman. And they're like black and really cool and velvety. I'm going to have to show you a picture, but I keep thinking I'm on the verge of rocking that thing.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just thinking the outfit will be really subdued, but it'll just be like all about the hat and some boots.
Funny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'll have to send you a picture.
So one thing, because I think we're alike in a lot of ways,
yes.
But so opposite in a lot of ways too.
And I don't want to be opposite of you. What am I opposite
about? One of the things that we are so opposite about is you love pranks and you like to be scared and to scare people.
Yeah. Well, true. I don't love to be scared, but I do like to scare other people.
I absolutely hate to be like, it makes me, it's really probably the only thing that will make me very angry.
That's a good, I'm logging that in. Okay, that's good.
I mean, very angry.
Yeah.
Not funny angry. Like, I will be very angry.
Yeah.
I don't like to be scared or pranked.
Yeah.
And
you're like, not the angry where everybody laughs.
It's yeah, no,
the angry
like, this
where everybody
is like,
gets the hell out of my house.
Yeah, and I'm not going to talk to them ever again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no,
that's really serious.
It's real serious. But I remember you telling me, I think it was April Fool's Day.
Oh, gosh.
Like a couple of months after we all lost Chris,
yeah.
And you did some prank on the family, and I don't even remember what it was, but I'm like, holy shit.
Yes.
How can she, what's your favorite prank you've ever pulled?
Okay, the thing is, I am not good with dates, and so it oftentimes sneaks up on me, and probably the most elaborate one I did is because I worked for this boss when I lived in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We worked at the newspaper and we had these cubicles, whatever. And I was friends. So she was my boss and I was friends with her boss. And so I went to him and I said, listen, we're thinking of this elaborate prank. Are you in? And he said, yeah, absolutely. Right. And she was one of those bosses who feisty, spunky, blonde, cute, petite, you know, but she was on fire and some people loved her and some people felt like she was a little bit abrasive to her.
Mm-hmm.
But she played elaborate pranks on other people, which kind of got me thinking ahead of time. So we were in sales and my friend and I went to the liquor store and we bought a bunch of those little liquor bottles. And then he called, so her boss, his name is Michael, called her in for a meeting so that she was out of her little area. And we took these half empty bottles and we hid them all over her, you know, in her files and in her drawers or purse, you know, and all this stuff, right? And so he goes in, she goes in and he says, Kathy, I am sorry, but, you know, I've gotten reports. People say that they smell alcohol on your breath while you're working. And I think we have a little bit of an issue here. And she goes, what? Are you kidding me? Right. And she's like, I'll call HR right now. You know, da, da, da. He's like, no. Let's just, I believe you. I think just to cover my own, you know, but if I can just go take a peek in your office, give it the all clear, we'll move on. And she goes, yeah, absolutely. So we're all sitting at our desks and she goes stomping by, right? She's a big person, like stomping by around the corner to her desk. And so he starts looking, well, she's a little bit shorter and you can just hear her go, you know what? And she's starting to get, you know, whatever. And so we had to peek over the top a little bit to point just barely, you know, but she was so where the bottles were. So eventually he opens a drawer and he goes, oh, Kathy. And he pulls out like one or two that are half empty or whatever. And she goes,
gosh.
You know what? You can take this job. And she throws her pencil against the wall. And we were like, April Fools. Like we popped over the top,
gosh.
You know, we were cracking up. But I mean, it's like one of those jokes that was good until it was almost not
yeah,
good. Where she was like, yeah, maybe. I don't know. But then the other ones are just like,
that is
probably,
so funny.
I'll tell you one more that was with my neighbor. This is the one after Chris died that it's the day snuck up on me. And one of my friends, I told him that this property they were looking at in town to build this house. And they had looked forever. He's like obsessive about it. And I was like, oh, hey, did you hear? And he's like, what? They were at my house. And I was like, you didn't hear about the neighborhood? And he goes, no. I said, oh my gosh, I don't want to be the one to break it to you, but there was a fire. And he's like, what? And I said, I'm pretty sure your lot is gone. Like it's like,
oh
it burned
gosh.
Out, you know, like it's, and he goes, oh my gosh, I didn't hear that. And I said, I would call your realtor. She probably knows. Like it's been all over the news or whatever. So he calls the realtor
Oh my gosh.
He's like, hey, what's going on with my property? Like, what about the fire? Like, what do I need? You know, whatever. And she's like, what? And as he's doing it, I'm cracking up and laughing. I'm like, April Fool's. And he's like, okay. Oh, all right. Looks like it. You know, just stupid stuff like that.
That's funny.
Then, okay, the last one, and then I'll stop. But see, you got me on a topic that I love. There was the disgust. People think it's really bad, the one I did against Chris when he was alive. Do you know that one?
About what?
I got the kids. Mind you, this guy scared me all the time. Okay. Yeah. Chris scared me all the time. So this was a revenge.
I think you told me this, but let's.
Okay. Let's so like, it was a last minute thing too. And I told the kids, I'm like, listen, mommy's going to lay on the floor. And I put my legs like where he could see him if he came around the corner. I said, go wake up daddy. Gosh. Don't laugh and say, daddy, mommy hit her head. And she's bleeding in the kitchen. It's so sick. I don't know. Anyways, they pulled it off perfectly. He comes running out, you know, in his boxers and just like slides around the corner. He's like, oh my God, babe. And he like comes over and I just turn over and I start laughing. And I'm like,
April Fool's.
He's like, y'all are sick. He's like, you're sick. You're a sick woman, you know? So, I don't know. All kinds of things. I pranked somebody that there was a weirdo at my house and he dropped lunch with everybody and was panicked finding his car to get home.
Oh my gosh. That is so funny. I don't know.
My jokes are really cruel, though, I think. They're really, I'm starting to hear myself and they're really not nice. So I'm glad to know that you don't like to be scared in general. And then
I hate to be scared, but I think it's funny that you like to be scared.
Sort of. I would never scare you,
but I think your stories are funny.
If you scared me, I would probably poop my pants because it would be so unexpected. You're like this angelic healer. And then if the healer scares you, you're screwed, right? Like it means the universe has gone off its axis.
Right.
And we're all in a big, big way. Yeah. My daughter used to do that to me. She used to hide behind doors because she was trying to make me laugh after Chris died, but I was already so edgy.
Oh my gosh.
And she would hide behind doors and do it. And I finally was like, you cannot scare mommy now. Yeah, I know it's funny, but like now is not the time.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay, mommy, I'm sorry. I was like, no, it's fine. It's fine. There'll be a day where you can make me pee my pants.
Oh my gosh. Axe and Addie love to scare me. And it drives me absolutely bonkers.
Right. Which is why they like
but
to
I'm
do it.
Very observant. So I usually catch them right before, you know, I know it's coming, but I still don't like it. And I'm like, ugh.
Okay. So.
And now they tell on each other. Like the other day. Addie was planning to scare me, and Axe came running up to me, and he whispered, Addie's around the corner.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And so I pretended like I was scared.
Oh, that was nice of
you.
So
I gave her thrill.
Yes, yes.
Wait
till they get older, because my son one time, he went on a belly crawl into the bedroom, under the bed, up around behind the headboard.
Oh, my gosh.
And scared my mother out of her freaking mind.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was pretty amazing, but yeah.
So that reminds me of a story Marcus and Morgan have with each other. I think it was Marcus that hid, but they had a waterbed that they shared.
Yeah.
And I think this is how the story goes. Marcus was laying, what do you call that?
Yeah.
Like sideways.
Okay.
And underneath the pillows. But this was when they were in like high school and he was a little bitty and he could fit underneath the pillows with the blankets pulled over.
Amazing.
And Morgan came in to go to sleep and Marcus jumped, like grabbed
him
and scared the living shit out of him.
Yeah, so that was probably a little bit of a tangle for a little while in the room.
But I picture that. I think it's so funny.
That's amazing.
I love other people know, other stories, but not.
I feel like I want them to reenact that somehow. Your beds are bigger.
Yeah.
You know, the guys are bigger.
They really should.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a little bit of a different
reaction
situation since they're both trained like really well now. Yeah. Might have to have some paramedics around. I don't know.
Okay, so I think we have a question from Patreon, do we?
We do. Randy asks, if you were to do the State of the Union address, you were going to be the president, what would the topics be that you choose?
That's a really good question for the State of the Union address. I don't know. Look, I'm going to come at this from a parenting point of view. I would start talking about how we respect people. You know, I would talk about really if we want to be leaders, we need to act with some decorum in, you know, in the Capitol and with these meetings and try to set better examples. I mean, that's the parent in me probably. I really think that there should be term limits all the way around for all of these people. So I know that the State of the Union would not be the time to do it, but that if I think of the things that I would really like to shed light on, it would be that.
Like
I would
Pelosi's
obviously
out.
banned for life. Yeah, banned like for life. Yeah, I don't even think the Democrats like her. I really think she's like a mafia boss.
Yeah,
there's something that she's got a hold or something on everybody because they're embarrassed by it.
Right.
So something's not right there. Yeah. I don't know what it is. You know, all due respect with whatever she's doing to stay there, but yeah. Yeah, and I would do some – I would change definitely some things about the military and so forth. So if I could do those changes and then make the address to, mm-hmm. you know, say it all. But I don't know. Right now, I don't know. I think I would just give people hope that the economy is good and I would be celebrating that. And I would talk about how we need to come together mm-hmm. and it's okay for us to have differing opinions. But what I would look at what we can celebrate. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that are going really well right now.
Mm-hmm.
And – I don't know. I mean, if I was going to have some people stand up, I think I would really celebrate all the legal immigrants that we have coming to this country. Mm-hmm. I think it's super cool. And I have no idea why we don't pay more attention to that. But I would have a total celebration about the numbers of people who are going through our process to be here legally.
Because yeah.
it's amazing. That's why we're still the melting pot. It happens every day.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't talk about it. We're just so focused on people who are illegally here as if that's the issue. So, and I'm not trying to get into that issue. I'm just saying it almost is presented in a way that negates the fact that we do have people coming into the country every day.
Yeah.
They're here legally, citizens. It's great. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. A lot of people don't know you pre-2013.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, I've been blessed with getting to know you and your family and everybody. And I love hearing about you and your growing up and you going off to college and just being adventurous and taking risks. And if you will, just tell the listeners a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that because I do think when I look back, I was definitely a weird mix of adventurous and sort of fearful about certain things, but definitely more adventurous and willing to risk in spite of any fear in order to have some of those thrills. And I grew up in Oregon, which I loved. And I look back now and I think what a blessing it was to have such a diverse group of people around me, artists. I think I love the beauty of it. But I also feel like I was never, and even when I was growing up there, which is weird because I was born there, I didn't feel like I was supposed to be there. And it was just rainy and gray a lot of the year and for whatever reason. So I left when I was 18 and I've never lived there since. I do like going back to visit and I love going in the summer, but I went to school in Wisconsin and, you know, I had a lot of actually really hard experiences in high school. I was suicidal in high school, which I don't think people who know me would know that even. I'm not even sure if my best friends knew it. And I, you know, I look back and I know exactly why. And I didn't know how to stand up for myself and I cared for people deeply. And so I got roped into some things that were looking back pretty emotionally abusive, but I didn't realize it because I was just so I'm very protective of my own kids that way where, you know, I actually, you know, I took your advice of giving them an incentive not to date anyone seriously through high school. I'll take them on a dream trip. I tell everybody that. It's the most
awesome.
Amazing thing ever. It gives them the out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it gives them an incentive to take care of themselves and figure out who they are before they start taking care of somebody else. That was the big trap for me is I was able to take care of somebody else, but I negated the opportunity, I missed the opportunity to take care of myself and figure out what that was like. So college was an extension of that. I was, you know, dating the same guy that looking back, it was harmful with his family too. It wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, just him. It was a whole situation and his family had their own dysfunction and all this stuff, but looked like the perfect family from the outside, which is a mind screw. So those were hard years. And then when I went to school in Wisconsin, I thought, I always have this tendency to think I'm going to go on this great adventure and it's going to be amazing. And I feel like something in my life is almost destined to say no. And that's true for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
We all suffer. But I've really been surprised at how horrible some things have been along the way. And yet looking back, I also realized that I love that I got to experience that then, get it out of the way, and now I'm who I am. And I've learned a lot. But yeah, I graduated with economics and business, major in economics, minor in business. And then I went to work right away and loved it. I couldn't wait to get out of college and go to work. I was so ready to be out in the world doing things. And so my interests like psychology and stuff like that, to do what I wanted to do, I would have had to stay in longer. And I find that fascinating because the things that you're interested in, you kind of always are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still interested. I don't have my doctorate in psychology, but I still am all about that world, right? And then after that, I just thought my mom would always say, you're going to move to Wisconsin and you're never going to come home. People stay where they're, she can be fatalistic about things, where they go to college. And so I definitely heard that and wanted to make sure she wasn't right. And so after I worked a couple of years, I moved out to Southern California. And
what brought you there?
So my mom grew up in Pasadena, Southern California, and then I have some family in Orange County. And I wanted the LA experience too. So I moved to Long Beach, and I thought growing up, spending a lot of our summers down there, I loved it, and we had family there, and it felt very natural. But I also just thought it was something I should do in life. Like, I should have that opportunity. I still think there's got to be a time when I'm in New York for a while, because I also want to be, I don't know if I have to live there, but spend a few months maybe, you know, I don't know. So I definitely still have that adventurous sense, like I know you have. You've traveled the world, and I would love to do that at some point, do more of it, which you've introduced me to a lot of cool places. But yeah, it was a long, painful road. And then I think that when I met Chris, it was a different kind of adventure and a different kind of pain and joy. And it's continued to be that. But really the joy with him and the love, the way that he was able to love, is extraordinary to me still. And, you know, there's a way that it naturally lives on in our kids, which is super cool to see. But I don't know of another man who loves the way that he loves. And maybe I just don't know them that intimately, right? I mean, I don't know them that intimately, but I mean, I feel like I know people well and I get into their psyche and stuff, but he had a unique way of doing that. And I think, I mean, I don't want to get too sad about it, but it would be, I think if Marcus, God forbid, something happened, I think that would be the same for you, because there's something different about the way that he loves and the way that he loves you in particular.
Right.
It's unlike anything you have experienced.
Like, people that are really good friends with him, they will all say, oh, he loved me. You know, I know his love. But it's like, no, you really don't.
You don't.
Unless you're laying your head next to him at night and having those babies with him and experiencing life all ups and downs, you don't know.
Yeah, it's true. And the way that, I mean, just to, the things that I see from the outside, the seriousness that he takes his love for you is, I think, part of what, if people are watching, they can tell, right? There's nothing really too big or too small. It's a respect, cherish thing. He has both of those things for you. He also loves to put you up on that pedestal, right? And serve and be romancing you. And I don't know, it's just an interesting mix. And like you said, it's obvious that even though you both coexist really well, that there is so much depth that nobody gets to see, which is, I think, what it also indicates how special it is. So, so you get it. I think that's the, and that was definitely the thing that I had to grow the most. That and children really are the two. And I've had a lot of crappy things that I've grown from, but he was the game changer. And he's the person that I changed for. And I think I knew that there probably isn't anybody else. I used to laugh at them and say, there's nobody else that could have put up with me. You know, nobody else is strong enough to be with me. But I think there was nobody else that was the right mix of things to make me see how I could be better and want to be better for it.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. That's okay.
Made me cry.
That's right. I love, the funny thing is, I was reading self-help books from like high school. I love to develop, but it's a different way when you really truly love somebody and you're ready to have your soul forged for that person is different than just being better and developing yourself, you know?
One of my favorite things I've ever seen about Chris was the home video that you shared. I'm going to cry. And the, sorry. No. The people that listen to this podcast have to think, like, Melanie's the biggest pussy. Bawl my eyes out.
Because you're, like, straight steel as far as strong. You're like steel magnolias, right? You're the soft and the strong.
But he's sitting on the bathroom floor reading a book to y'all's son, and it was just the sweetest thing. And you could really feel, just by watching that itty-bitty clip, you know, you can feel his love.
Yeah.
And especially, I'm an empath, so I can see something and immediately feel that.
Right.
And that, I don't know what it was, 30-second clip that I saw, I was like, gosh, he loves hard.
He does. He loves big. And, you know, it's interesting because you are an empath, which is also why this podcast is good, because you feel and you're an amazing communicator and storyteller. I've always loved that about you. So I would say that's part of what makes you so amazing and strong is that emotion. That video was before he went on deployment, and there was an idea people had: read books to your kids so that they can read along with you. And so he did it, he was almost not going to do it. I think it was like the night before he left, and then he decided to do it. But we put the video camera up there on a tripod and walked out so that he could just have that time to do it. But it ended up being this really prophetic, sad thing. And Chris didn't think he was going to come home from that deployment. And so when he was reading to him, it was hard. And I remember him coming down the stairs afterwards, and I could just tell there was such a heaviness in his heart. And he says something at the end of that video, like, just savor one more book, buddy, because I think you might, I think he says something like, I think you might want this someday if I'm gone or something like that. And I was like, ugh, it was just so, but it's so beautiful. And it was calm, patient, that heaviness that you felt was, yeah, it was like that gentleness in such a way that is all encompassing. You felt really, and that was something about him that I was so attracted to, because as strong and tough as he was, he had this way that was so, maybe that's the word, maybe it's just all encompassing, gentleness. It was like a spirit. It wasn't like gentle. It's like something that, it's almost like a spirit that wraps you up and says, you're okay. You're cared for, you know? I remember even in the beginning when I'd get a little feisty or something, and he'd come up behind me and just put his hand on my back and say, babe, I don't want to fight with you. What can we do? But it was, I could never redo it the way he did it, because it's something with the strong hand and the presence of this funny guy who's gregarious and all this other stuff, that he just stops and like wraps you up in this spirit. And then it just felt like everything's okay. And you're like, yeah, okay.
Do you still feel that?
You know, I used to feel it a lot, and I block it because it makes me sad, but it's just that I miss it. And there's a, somebody got me this music box. There was that song, Josh Groban, You Lift Me Up. And right after he died, I kept feeling like he was still lifting me up and like helping me go. And there was a time when I had this dream. Oh my gosh, Melanie, it was like the worst and most beautiful dream, but it was so powerful. I couldn't shake it for a while. And I went into heaven, and he was sitting in this thing. It was kind of like a dugout, and there was a young girl next to him. And it was like, I went in saying, I just want to look at you. Like, I just want to see your face, because I don't let myself absorb his face too much because it hurts. So the pictures I have that I know are there, I do it. If I see a new one, I can feel a little bit, and I just go, it's cool. I'm just, you know, I manage it. But there was something in me that just wanted to really take in his face. And so he was in this dugout, and he looked at me, and I knew he was there for her, and she was like 13 or something. And he like looked at me in this calm way, like, go ahead and take it in. And so I did. And then he every once in a while, he'd look over my shoulder at something just barely, and then come back. So I thought there was maybe something going on behind me. Anyway, he let me do it for a long time. And then she got up, and he told her something. He said, you're dead. And she said, I don't want to be dead. And then she like fell on the ground, and she was crying. And it was like, he was helping her pass and saying, it's okay. And then I was like, we have to do something. We have to help her. And I'm like, and for whatever reason in my dream, like, her body was there. And he goes, it's okay. And I said, can we bury her? Like, can we do something? Like, I can't just leave her here. And so he just sort of indulged me. He was like, we can, if you want to, it doesn't matter. Like, she's, you know, and then he laid down next to me. We're in this grass, and he laid down, and he just let me put my head on his chest. And I laid there for the longest time, and it was like everything felt like it was, like, I could breathe, and it was good, and I was so happy. And then he goes, babe, I gotta go. And I was like, oh, please don't go, you know. And I just, but I didn't say that. That's what I felt. But I knew he was giving me more than, you know, like, I was getting a gift. And so I just was on my knees, and I sat, you know, on my knees in the grass. And I just looked at him with tears rolling down my face. Like, it was an understanding. Like, I knew. And he had given me a gift at that time. And then he was walking away. And he looked back, and he said, babe. Or I said, what did I say? I said, I don't know if I think I was just crying. Yeah, I don't think I said anything. I think it was a feeling. And he goes, I'll see you soon. And he goes, it's a minute. In eternity, it's just a minute. I'll see you in a minute. And I was like, just sat there understanding. And like, he put on these sunglasses and like just walked off. And I was like, oh God, you know. But I think there was a part of me that was like, I needed to have that time and realize that
and I don't get it again. But like have it one more time and like absorb it and let him walk away. And you know, I think it was good. I thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe he's telling me that it's time for me to do this on my own. But I don't know if I feel that way anymore. You know, yeah. I don't know, because I still feel like sometimes he's around. So, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I've only shared that dream with a couple of people, but it was so powerful that I can't. I mean, I almost wonder, like, did I get a spiritual experience or did I just, yeah, it's so powerful. I can't. I'm overwhelmed whenever I don't think about it much because it just, it's big.
Who do you think that little girl was?
My impression, it was like, I remember she had this red hair and thick glasses and choppy hair. And it almost seemed like she was, I hate to say it, I felt a sadness for her. Like she was almost went through this world for 13 years being just kind of ignored or not acknowledged. And so it felt like he was sitting with her for a little bit just to give her some time before she had to know that she was dead. Like she just kind of was sitting there going, like she didn't know, but he was just being patient with her. And then, I mean, it was definitely nobody I recognized, and I didn't think it was anybody he knew before. And when he was looking over my shoulder, I felt like there was stuff that was going on that he was knowing he had a job to do, knowing he had something he had to be doing, but wanted to give me that time.
Like he's still the protector.
Yeah, and that he was like helping somebody else transition from maybe an unexpected death. So she was like 13, 14, something in there, and it was like, it was just like he was just so calm and patient with me, letting me look at him at the same time, calm and patient with her, you know, and just kind of taking care of everybody. And then it was like he had more work to do or something.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. What's funny? Do we have funny stories we can talk about? That's really heavy.
Okay, well, we don't have to get into, like, everybody knows your story with Chris, you know, and so I don't want this to be about that.
Yeah.
Google it. I mean, if you haven't seen the movie, if you haven't read American Sniper, An American Wife, and
Barbara Walters has nothing on you, though, because like you can get in the whole story, but like I don't tell that story to people, but you're very good at it. And it is part of my story, but I will say, you know, we talked about this a little bit before too, that it becomes a part of your story and it lives mm-hmm. in me, but I am different. And I know we talked earlier today about how I looked back at the gravestones, and at the time that we put in Chris's, it was such, I felt so much pressure to try to get it perfect for him. And since we had talked about a lot of things, but not a gravestone, I had no idea what to do. So mm-hmm. I ended up getting this, green was his favorite color. And I went to all the details to make it his favorite. And I was thinking a gift I could give my children, because it was also really expensive, is to just pay for mine, have it done. Don't worry about it. If you got enough to carry when you're somebody you love dies, right? And so I just did it all really from a very practical standpoint, and also because I wanted the children represented with him too. And so we have, you know, their hands.
I love it.
And I really thought about it, and I thought of in my life, what does my life stand for? And they're going to be the biggest things that if you want to know me, you'd know my, that's, I think that's the biggest and most important part of me. And I don't mean it like I fully anticipate and expect that I am raising them to leave. Like I do not, mm-hmm. I'm not their problem, you know, not that I'm a problem, but I'm just saying like, yeah. I don't want them to be tethered to me forever just because I love them. I think I love them enough to say, I am giving you my best so that you can mm-hmm. be free. Of course,
which is the hardest job as a mom.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's, yeah, you know, so.
It really is. It's
yeah.
the most difficult job as a mom.
Yeah. And I mean, and you're so close with Hunter, so I can, I watch I have for a very long time with Hunter watched how you've navigated life with him and felt very much like you're a sort of a mentor in that area, or I don't know the word I'm looking for, but my role model. Thank you. Role model. Thanking myself for coming up with the word. Thank you, Taya. You're welcome, Taya. Because I do see that you love him so completely, and then you've let him have all these experiences in life, and you have this close, cool relationship. And I feel like that's very similar to what I have with my kids. And yet, yes, I watched him grow up so fast, mm-hmm. right? That I remember having my son little and my daughter too, but like just because you had a boy and I was thinking, what just happened? That's going to happen to me. I'm going to turn around, you know, like
It is. I mean, if you think about it, you and Chris were at our wedding.
Yeah.
And Hunter was 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's 22.
That's a heartbeat. That's crazy.
I mean, think about that. Like,
I know.
It happens so quickly.
Yeah. It's like that Fiddler on the Roof song where it's like, turn around and she's four, turn around and she's, you know. And I think because of that, I've actually appreciated, because of Chris's death, because I had a cousin who died young. There are a lot of because, but I really try to cherish the time that I have. And I realize that it's very short. And I think as parents, we can get so busy, but I do feel good about that ability to have absorbed as much as I can. And yet I still think that when they go, it was never enough, right? Yeah. It was never enough. And you can't go back in time. But I do feel like with that, going back to the gravestone, I look at it and I think it's appropriate that my name is there with a gravestone, because I really feel like that person died a really painful death, but that there's a metamorphosis that happens and it's been a really good one. And I wish that I wish I knew a lot of what I know now, you know, back then, but I really liked a lot of parts of that girl, right? If I was to say that's me, that girl, I liked her heart a lot and I liked her sense of humor. And I feel sorry for her that she didn't have more answers on how to do things, and that she didn't know as much about living without fear. And I'm also really happy for her that she at least had the opportunity to turn those tragedies of losing friends early into an appreciation for every minute, you know, that we did have. So it's a mixed bag. It's really weird. I feel very disconnected to that person. It's very disconnected.
To who you were
before. Mm-hmm. I do. It's weird. I mean, I'm so disconnected. I would say it's like, it's appropriate. There's a gravestone. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. Which totally off topic, but we will be buried.
I know,
next
very
to each
close
other.
To each other. Yeah. I know, that's
we're
so
right
cool.
across the sidewalk.
I know, that's so cool. I mean, in life, we should have been neighbors for sure. And since we are not, we at least arranged it in death. Our bodies will be like, what's up, girl? And you know, that's the reason, though, that Chris is there. It was Rick Perry and Marcus.
Yeah, Marcus was like, hell no, we're not going to Arlington.
Yeah.
He's a Texas boy.
Yeah. And... Oh, no, he was like, Taya, this is, you know, and I was like, oh, I don't know, Marcus, I've never been there. And he's like, no, that's like where, you know, that's where it's happening.
And I'm pretty sure you flew out the next day to go down to Austin and look at it. And Governor Perry, acting governor at the time, met you at the airport.
Yeah, but that's the magic of Melanie Luttrell, though. Like, things happen that don't happen in normal people's lives when you're around you. So I was like, I said, well, I've never been there. You know, we can drive to Austin. And you're like, no. Right? Yeah. Like, I'll have a couple of jets waiting for you. But, you know, it was pretty, being there, and I didn't want to bury him somewhere that I hadn't felt. I think you and I are both really big feelers. Like, it's got to feel right, not just look right. And it looked right online, but the feeling there is super peaceful. Yeah. It's very different than any other
magical
graveyard. Yeah, it's a cemetery. Yeah, it's amazing. And the flags that just sort of gently fly in the wind, and there's a little brook, and it's very peaceful. So once I was there, I thought, oh yeah, this
and
is the resting
place. And the people that run it are so good, too.
So good.
Like, it's just... It's a really good feeling all the way around.
Yeah. And Mel Birdwell will be there too. We're going to have a great time. Yeah.
I'm not thrilled that I had to pick out my plot by myself.
Oh.
Marcus was supposed to go with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided to go hunting.
Oh, did he?
Instead. So.
He trusts you?
Yeah. So he still hasn't seen the spot.
So you went by yourself? By yourself?
Myself. Oh, I had to go by myself because we had we were under a time limit to pick it out.
Did it occur to you to just give a girl a holler and like, maybe I could have met you down there? It is a long drive, but I would have tried.
This was,
before Chris died?
I think it was before Chris died. Okay, yeah. It was just a weird timing. And anyway, it was very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
walking. Yeah. I think with his name's Harry that runs the where do me and my husband want to be buried?
Yeah, he's not here. I'll tell him.
I will tell him. I'll take a picture and send it to him.
That's funny. Yeah,
yeah. But we're literally across the sidewalk,
and you're on the hill instead
we're
of
on
flat.
The hill.
Uh-huh. Okay, so does the head go down or up? Did you consider?
You know,
these
I
things?
Thought head under the tree, feet facing sidewalk.
Okay, yeah, so that makes you on an incline where
your
head is
laying
up.
On the grass.
Yeah, okay, that's good. Because otherwise, there's a weird thing that happens. You're like, otherwise you're on your head and then...
Yeah, I don't want to be upside down. Yeah. I get vertigo.
No, right? I know, you get vertigo. And plus, like, sinusy and just, you know, your feet will fall asleep. There's just so many things that'll happen.
I know. It is funny that you think of those things, though. I remember when we were, you know, getting ready to bury Chris, and they don't usually put shoes on people. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
And I thought I was having a really hard time with that. And he had just gotten these brand new boots. And I was like, and they said, well, we don't typically do that. I think it's kind of hard to put the shoes on. Oh, yeah, because
if they're swollen or something.
I think. And yeah. I was like, well, you know, I think I feel like he needs his boots. Yeah, like what's he gonna do?
Yeah,
like you know, you know they don't need them, but there's this weird thing that happens. And you know the shirt that I put on him, right?
I don't remember.
So, you know, there was so much of Chris that I just loved how he taught me a lot about just you are who you are, man. Like mm-hmm. whatever people think, they think. And so I put him in the, you know, I tried to be very authentic to who he was, and so it was like, you know, jeans and kind of a plaid dress. But the t-shirt underneath was a white t-shirt and in black capital letters across, very small. So you'd have to kind of look, not very small, but like, I don't know, maybe half an inch or an inch tall letters. It said, "Do I look like a fucking people person?" And I put that under the shirt because I was like, you know, if we're going to have part of this open casket deal, he would love that. Gosh, I was like, there's nothing
that
more.
Is so funny.
And I thought he would either like that or for me to like, you know, position his hand and flipping people the bird when they that came would... up to look. But I was like, well, yeah, I should be a little more respectful. I'll do the little bit
covert.
There were
several admirals there. And, yeah.
I didn't care about actually the admirals. He probably wanted to flip off some of them. But it was more about the like an elderly woman, let's say.
Yeah, right.
Somebody who had some class and grace that maybe didn't need to be subjected to that. But I did. Like that still to this day makes me smile for him. I think he would have really liked that. But anyway, they ended up accidentally burying his boots and I didn't know it.
Oh,
so like there was a misunderstanding. So I remember a few months later I was looking for his boots and then I called the funeral home and he's like, I said, do you know where Chris's boots are? And he's like, they're with him. And I was like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. You're not getting this back.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
He must have made it out. I don't know.
That is so funny. Yeah. It was very hard for me. I can't look at people.
Yeah, open
casket. Yeah. So when we were there, Marcus was having a very hard time that day. And so I was trying to focus on him and getting him out of the door because he was falling asleep. Very medicated.
Yeah.
Self-medicated.
Yes, exactly. So numbing the pain. I get it.
Definitely numbing the pain.
So this would have probably creeped you out too. I mean, I can kind of laugh about some of these things now looking back. At the time, it felt very, very natural. But I was, I wanted to be with him, of course. And I just got this sense of like, I didn't care what it looked like. I held his hand for a long, like when we'd have meetings about stuff. I was we're going to go in the room where he is and I'm going to hold his hand while we're talking to him. So, aww. I mean, like, that's kind of weird. But honestly, at the time, it just felt normal. And I'm like, I'm not going to miss an opportunity to just, like, I loved his hands. And I'm not going to miss an opportunity to hold his hand.
Aww.
But I just think of the people on the outside, like, the grace and kindness they showed to act like that's perfectly normal. And absolutely, they'll accommodate
like
that.
Like, Walt. Like, what are you doing?
Well, yeah. You know what? It was, like, the funeral home director. He was, like, asking me to pick things out. And I was like, can I just go sit with Chris while I'm picking him out? Like, I don't want to just sit in here. Like, he's right there. It's so weird. The mind does some crazy things. And I can only imagine Chris on the other side being like, babe, like, really?
You
seriously?
Don't have to hold my hand right
like,
now.
Mm-hmm, yeah. It was for me, not for him though. Yeah. But totally. Yeah. I don't know. Weird stuff.
There was a lot of funny stories from that week.
Yes.
Tell
me them because you were just the calm little magical angel that was around. But I
completely shut the thought of myself off.
Yes.
And I just remember about day 8, you came in. It was either you or your mom. You're like, Mel, there's deodorant in the
Okay, for the record, you didn't stink and you never have. That's like part of the angelic miracle of you. I'm like, you don't ever have anything like bad breath or body. But I remember thinking like, can we serve her in any way? Because this woman showed up in her like leggings and t-shirt and met like every executive at the Cowboys Stadium and whatever. And was like, we're just going to need this.
Yeah,
we need that.
I looked homeless. I was actually, because it was got really cold.
Yeah.
And you gave me one of Chris's sweatshirts.
Yep.
So, which is obviously very big for me. I'm 5'2".
Yeah, right.
So I'm in leggings, probably Uggs or something.
Yes, Uggs. I remember it. Yep.
And one of Chris's sweatshirts. And pretty sure it looks like I had sex bedhead, like full on rat's nest.
Hey, everybody handles their stress differently, Melanie. Nobody's judging you for that.
Well, no, it was just from not brushing my hair.
Yeah, I know.
For multiple days.
But you have your story, I have mine. Okay. Right? In my story, you and Marcus were getting rid of stress.
Yeah, I think Marcus even went home at some point and I was.
You were just working.
I was just working.
Yeah, you were just
and
making
so,
things happen.
So, yeah, I was just doing, you know, go to A to B to blah, blah, oh, yeah. Let's get this done.
But
and
like,
I never
in a way that was
looked
so...
in the mirror. And I'm sure all these people were like, who the fuck is this homeless chick?
No, I think everybody was like, this woman is of another kind, because you just were so selfless in caring for people and making sure things happened with a voice like this, that everything is fine. But like, it's like a, there's not going to be, nobody's going to take advantage of anything when you're taught. Most people can't pull that off, but you pull it off in a calm, sweet voice, but nobody's going to mess with you and nobody's going to say it's not going to happen either.
Yeah. Well,
it's true.
I mean, it's true because when we were talking about like where to have it, because it was like, okay, the book was doing very well at the time. And it was like, okay, do you want it public? Yeah. Do you want it private or whatever? Yeah. And you were like, maybe the high school, the Midlothian High School.
Did I say that? That's funny.
And we thought like one of the big churches in Midlothian. Yes. And I'll never forget you saying, you know, Chris joked about being going out on the star of Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, let's do it.
Yeah. And I was like, seriously? Do you actually think we get really? But what else is funny is that, like, you know, we had a this part's not funny. Our friend died at Christmas right before kind of he did. But the funny part was that we were talking. I said, I bet you'd want like a really small service. Mm-hmm. And he goes, huh? And I said, well, wouldn't you? I don't know. Would you be comfortable with something big? And he goes, I'm dead, right? And I said, yeah. And he goes, yeah, blow it out. You know what I mean?
Like, my gosh.
Yeah, because he was thinking, if I don't have to be there, you know what I mean? Then yeah, go for it. Like, do whatever you want to do. So that was also key for me, because I think otherwise I would have felt maybe I wasn't following something he would have wanted. Uh-huh. And so, yeah, Cowboy Stadium, we're like, is that weird? Is it disrespectful? Is it cool? Is it whatever?
Is it possible?
Is it possible? I mean, yeah, good. I think anything's possible around you, but...
Well, it's not around me. I mean, it's just the situation and who he was.
Yeah.
I mean, people wanted to honor him.
Jones, by the way, for whatever people think of him or don't, he was so lovely about all of that. And to this day, it really is a special thing for him. And we're working on getting the Medal of Honor Museum it's already planned to be in Arlington, but they had an opportunity. The guy who, Joe Daniels, who designed the 9/11 in New York Memorial, he was meeting with Jerry, and Jerry still feels like this very strong patriotic connection about that time.
Everyone that worked with that organization been over backwards and never said no to anything.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was really, really cool. I mean, so many different people orchestrated that, you know, and had a hand in it, but it was really neat to see everyone work together.
Yeah. And such a blessing, by the way, for me to walk away from the casket. The only thing that I could do to walk away was to just take a minute and go, okay, you know what? Your Cowboy Stadium. Think about how cool this is for your husband, right? That's the thing that got me, because I had to switch something off of what I felt and do something of. So for me, I think, what if that was in a really somber environment? Yeah. I might not have left. They might be like, you know, still waiting for me to come out of it, you know? So that kind of was a neat thing to think that in some way that would make him happy, you know, or he would be impressed by that. Like, whoa, I can't believe you pulled that off. Like, that kind of thing actually ended up being a pretty big blessing for me.
Yeah, that was really neat. I think so. Walt actually listens to the podcast. We can't say his last name, but
oh my God, I love him. Yeah,
but
and his family.
He and T listen. Yeah. So
some of the best people in the world. So major shout outs. And you know, he was just a huge part of that with my kids.
Yeah,
and like so kind. And
the coordination. I mean, it was for people that don't really understand. It was different because Chris wasn't killed active duty or he wasn't actively in the military. Right. So there wasn't, you know, a Navy Keiko coming to the door. It wasn't like that. But in the end, they did send Walt, yes. and he helped kind of be that liaison.
And he was somebody that Chris loved.
Yeah.
And by the way, just a side note here, this is another thing I've never told anybody else, but there are two people there who told me that officers typically don't carry the casket of an enlisted guy.
Oh my gosh.
And they're there and they look like they're representative and they have their own big podcast and everybody thinks that it's a character of a man, can't stand the person, didn't carry it, right?
Really?
But spoke. And yet somebody, you know, there are other people like the Waltz of the world and the quiet other people who absolutely were that they're that humble, amazing warrior who
that's
quietly
so
carry.
So highly ranked too. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares about
nobody.
What the military?
It wasn't even a military funeral. Regardless.
Right, it wasn't.
But by the way, I've heard that's absolutely not true. But
yeah, I have no idea.
I didn't know at the time, so yeah. I was like, oh, okay. But I do look at somebody like Walt and T and just think, those are the people that are just one in a million, too. They're always mm-hmm. going to be those quiet, living a good life, humble, best people. And I think Walt, I believe, is the one that my daughter was asking. She had the folded flag, and there were the bullets from the 21-gun salute in there. And she turned to him and said, are these the bullets that killed my daddy?
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And he just bent down and was like, looked her in the eye and took her hands. And he said, no, honey, those are not. Those are in heaven with your dad. And I mean, like out of the blue, right?
Oh my
like
gosh,
just, I know.
Terrible.
Crazy. I know. And it's just like the innocence of kids, but mm-hmm. that comfort level to ask somebody
yeah.
that. And
you just know, so she won't be scared of it.
Yeah. He was just a rock for the kids and mm-hmm. for me. And I just, I don't know. That whole thing, you know, I mean, they're yeah. just, they're.
There was a lot of horror stories from that week, too.
Yeah.
Like,
weird
horrific
stuff.
Things that happened.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
People bring, it brings out the best and the worst
of
people.
It really does. Yeah. But one of my favorite memories from that week, since, and this is only for one or two listeners, Walton T.
Yeah.
he's total surfer.
Yes.
And, like, beach bum in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, I have to have cowboy boots. And
yes.
so we went and got cowboy boots and I still have the pictures on my phone of
amazing.
Him picking out his pair of cowboy
yeah,
boots.
Yeah, he has to have them.
And it's so funny because they came and visited.
Yeah, does he bring his boots?
Yeah, and he brings
okay,
his boots.
Okay,
but
perfect.
It's just so funny because we, that
yeah.
Sad week and
yes.
a week that we'll never forget had some fun memories.
And
too.
If it didn't, I think Chris would have been really disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Like if there weren't some... He'd been to enough wakes, too, where you have to be super respectful, which everybody was.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have your people and care for each other. And then you have to laugh. I mean, if you don't, right? Like, we had to laugh all the time. There's no sense in any of it if you can't help each other blow off some steam with laughing about something, especially
mm-hmm.
for a guy who laughed all the time. And people don't know that. If they didn't know him and they just see the movie or the book, you know, it was dramatic. So we didn't talk about all the laughing stuff, but he was laughing all the time,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty great. And Walt's son and our son, it's funny to watch those two together too at Lazy J. And
uh-huh.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I might still have he doesn't bring a cowboy hat with him, does he?
I
think that might still be at my house because I couldn't figure out. I need to ship it to him if not. And so next time he needs to wear the hat
oh my
and
gosh,
the boots.
How funny.
With a Hawaiian shirt, right?
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, I love them.
But yeah.
Their whole family. Something since then that I have personally seen in you that has been a big change. And like you say, you're not the person you were before
yeah.
or whatever. You're just not good or bad, but just a different person.
Well, I'm good.
No,
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
But your faith has grown
oh, yeah.
enormously.
Mm-hmm.
And I really admire that. I mean, it's no secret. My faith is how I get by.
Yep.
And I really look up to you and how you use that as your rock. But not just in bad times, like every
yeah.
day. You're recognizing it in good. You're recognizing it in bad. You're always praising our Lord, who's given us everything,
yeah.
good and bad.
Yeah.
And your ability to pray for somebody is beyond any of the big TV preachers.
Aww.
Like, you blow anybody and everybody out of the water.
You might be biased, but like
and I'm not. Like, it doesn't matter what is going on in my life. If I send you a text and say, hey, can you pray for me? Like,
yeah.
And I'll just say two words, and
yeah.
you will send this three-page text
yeah,
prayer
seriously.
That is so on point. And I only gave you two or three hint words, and it's so on point. And I really feel like God's given you that gift to pray for people. What do you think? I mean, obviously, loss has catapulted that, but right. What else, like, who are your mentors that have helped you strengthen your faith?
So, you know, I find it really actually pretty interesting that I can pray out loud like this, because I grew up saying the Our Father, but it was more private. My dad prayed at the dinner table, but it was a very similar prayer each night. So what's interesting is I really never did pray out loud until Chris and I, you know, started doing it with the kids before he was killed, and it wasn't something he was very familiar with either. But I remember early on when we lived in California, there was a friend of mine who prayed with me out loud when we were on a walk and we sat down on the sidewalk, and I thought, that's extraordinary. I've never experienced that, like a friend that just sat with me and prayed. I was blown away. And then my aunt did it another time at our house, and I was like, this is so moving to me. I have to get out of my comfort zone and try to do this for other people. And so that's really what started it, was that I was so touched and so moved in a way that I hadn't been in any other way. And so I wanted to try to do that for other people. And I've really, it's been a journey of like pushing myself. Cause I remember a couple of times I felt like this nudge, like pray. Mm-hmm. And I thought, seriously, I'm going to suck. You know, I was mm-hmm. talking to all these,
Always so scared I'm going to say something stupid.
Yes. Right. And I remember saying it, but this is what I found is I did it to a group of police officers that were, they weren't in uniform. So it was a off duty conference or something like that. And I knew I wasn't in a place to do it, but I felt that urge. And so I said, guys, if you'll just indulge me, I just want to pray over you. It's just my faith. And if you don't mind. And I stumbled through it, but I said, look, I know I'm stumbling, but I hope you hear my heart. Right. And so that's kind of the way I did it. And I got a lot of good feedback from people, even though it wasn't like a great eloquent prayer. And I knew going in, it wasn't going to be, but I just felt the urge to do it. And what I found is that people are so kind about it because they know that it takes courage mm-hmm. to pray out loud. I mean, and I find the more conversational, the better. And even if it's like, there are times where I'm praying and I go, God, I know I don't know even what I'm trying to say, but I'm just asking the Holy Spirit to translate because you know my heart. You know, I just think you have to give yourself freedom to not have it all figured out.
Yeah. Well, you do it very well.
Thank you.
Is there any preachers or anybody that you kind of look up to or?
You know, yes. I guess I'm listening to myself a little bit. I think I'm just like anti-establishment, independent, mm-hmm. dude, rebellious, sort of weird that way. So I never really followed what other people followed, right? Mm-hmm. I'd go to small churches where I just loved the, you know, mm-hmm. pastor, whatever. But when I was painting my old house, getting ready to sell, I got an audiobook by Billy Graham called Leading with Love. And some of the things he said in there were so poignant. And one of the things he said that I absolutely loved is he talked to a group of guys that he was starting out with. And he said, what are the main pitfalls for people who are evangelists? Mm-hmm. And they said it was sex, money, power. And he just decided, okay, if those are the problems, how are we going to avoid and just make sure we're not even tempted? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I loved is that I think he knew he could trust himself, but he also knew that evil is evil and it tempts all of us at times. And so how could he just remove the temptation? And so they did things, they wouldn't even accept money at all. It didn't go in their hands. It went to an mm-hmm. accountant. And I just loved some of those ways that he attacked life on a realistic level. And one of the things I loved is in his older years too, he was failing in health a little bit. And some of his board members were like, we're independently wealthy. We're not going to take money from any privately, our private funds. We want to get you a corporate jet to fly on. And he thought about it overnight. And he said, you know, I just don't think that that's going to look right to people, or that people are going to think that we did this the right way, even if we did. So I'm going to go ahead and just fly commercial. And I thought, you know, that takes some discipline. Mm-hmm. If you're not feeling good, you've lived a good life, you've given to a lot of people to say, you know, and okay, that's another thing. I have to live a life where I don't care what people say about me. Mm-hmm. And I know he had a different experience. But the other thing that I liked is he said if somebody really had an issue with him, was a big time critic, that can be pretty painful. Mm-hmm. He would ask them to sit down and talk. And he would just talk with them. And I think that takes a lot of courage. Mm-hmm. But he would leave where he got most of the time a really positive. He would turn a critic into sort of a friend.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie about I forget what they call it, but it's the Mr. Rogers movie.
No, but I've heard it's amazing. It's I need the same to see thing. That. It is.
He's taking a journalist that was wanting to write kind of a hit, you know,
piece
Mr.
Rogers yep. is
bullshit type person.
Yeah.
He wanted to write a hit piece, and he was like, well, if you're going to write something about me, we have to spend time together.
Oh.
And he would stall. And so every time they would, I mean, I'm spoiler alert, like I'm okay. telling this whole movie.
Okay, but. Good. Maybe I'll watch it more because you're a good storyteller.
But anyway, I'm not going to, pretty much the whole movie is him stalling and getting to know this journalist and the journalist getting to see his heart.
Yeah.
And even as bad as he wanted to write, not that he wanted to write something bad about him, he just didn't, the journalist truly didn't believe someone could be so good.
Yeah. You know, isn't that interesting? Because if you are a good person and if you're trying to do the right thing, I think mm-hmm. there's a spiritual attack that comes on it. But I also think just people, right?
Yeah.
And they come to it with their own reasons that probably have nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. But I have looked at that and thought, okay, so why wouldn't I? Because there have been times where I'm like, why don't I just call this person and talk to them? One is, I think you have to be choosy, right? They have to be interested mm-hmm. in hearing you too. And if they're not, there's no point in it. You can't right. talk to somebody who has no curiosity. But the other thing is when you go, how do you not see my heart? Right? Like you can look at people and go, you've known, but how? And I think sometimes it isn't about your heart. They truly aren't looking theirs. At you at all. Yeah. It's about whatever they need to do.
I've had to learn that the hard way over the last, 10 years being with Marcus is because I try to look at everybody
yep.
with a clear slate.
Yep.
But there are some people out there that have yep. this disposition, like they want to think of you a certain way. Yep. Maybe they heard something you said and they took it wrong yep. or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they want to prove that you're a bad person
right.
because of that. And yep. it's like, people,
yeah.
get off your high horse. You don't have to be haters.
No, you don't.
Like live your own life.
Yeah.
Why sit there and try to bring someone else down yeah. so hard and live your life for it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's somebody that actively does that to Marcus and which in turn does it to me. And it's very hurtful. And I know that you have it tenfold, but.
Well, yeah, but it is. But you know, the good news, the blessing in it, right? Because it's extraordinarily painful, especially the closer you get. And if people are even lying, you know, there are people that said Chris and I weren't living under the same roof when he died. I'm like, why would you do that? Why would you even, you know, I mean, number one, there are so many people. I mean, we were going out to dinner with people that night. I mean, you know what I'm saying? We have yeah. a lot of neighbors. It's not like,
yeah.
But the other thing is I thought, okay, there's a need that they have to put their feelings into anger, because when you can be angry, you don't have to feel hurt. Mm-hmm. And so they obviously have a hurt that they're not willing to address. And so they put it on you, and it really does say more about them than you. It is hard when you're the recipient or when they're telling other people. But then I have to think, well, the people that are listening are, if they're embracing that, they're those people that are always going to embrace it. Yeah. You are really good about, I could be skeptical about some people, and you're really good about saying, yeah, but I mean, we just talked about somebody before yeah. the show and it was like, you know, I kind of have seen and heard this and I just don't know. And your point was, but they're just a phenomenal parent.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, yeah, that would get me too. Like, I would be like, okay, we're in. Yep, great. You know, because none of us are perfect at the end of the day.
Right.
And all of us can take one part of somebody's life and twist it. Like, I feel like there's a fabulous novel that we should write, or somebody should write, that's mm-hmm. about a story, you know, and I know there are some of these, but seen from 10 different mm-hmm. lenses. They yeah. could be 10 different stories if you wanted them to be.
Right.
You know, so it's just, I think there comes a point where we just go, there's an overriding arc to what you see from somebody, and you just give them credit for that. There's no reason to nitpick, really. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's a good point.
And so, the truth comes out. I will say this. People who are mean and hateful,
mm-hmm.
there might be a group of people who believe those haters at first, mm-hmm. but if they're around them long enough, it'll eventually turn on yeah. them, or they'll see it on so many people. They'll go, oh, you know what? Probably none of it was true, because they say that about a lot of people.
Right.
Anyway, yeah.
That's true. I just have to block it out of my mind.
Yeah, because it takes years for people to figure it out, usually. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I get so emotionally invested. I don't do stress well.
Yeah.
And it affects my health.
Yeah.
So yeah. If I get stressed out, I get physically ill.
Yeah.
And
I had to smile a little bit though, because I was like, but you handle everybody else's stress like you're.
Well, that's the problem is magic. I absorb other, like if someone's hating on it, like I'll feel that hate. Yeah. Like I'm not, for whatever reason, I don't know why God gave me this, but I can feel other people's feelings.
Yes. Yep.
And that's why I have to be very picky about who I have around me.
Yep.
Because I can't handle anger like that. Yeah. I can't handle pain very well. Unless it's a pain from, you know, like what I can't handle.
Your friend's
handle
child
well,
dying, your friend's yes, husband you know, dying.
Stuff kind like of that. I feel like God gave me a gift of comfort.
Yep, for sure.
And I want to be there to comfort if I can. If I'm not helping, then I will remove myself from that situation.
That's right. Yep.
But if I can help, I want to be there to help. One of your posts that you made that is one of the most impactful things that I've ever read is your 7-year post and how you had given yourself 7 years to basically like figure it out and cope and and you would feel like you would feel some sort of healing at that point.
Yeah.
And you've reached that 7 years where now that it's 7 years plus 26
days. Dude, you're good. That's awesome. That's really good. I'm like, what year is it?
25 days. Yeah. How do you feel now? And what do you feel like the next 7 years will be?
That's a great question. So I feel now... it's interesting because I know I'll be a lifelong learner. That's just how I am. And I like to develop. But the 7-year with respect to Chris was huge for me. And I think it released some of that pressure for me. But then the other side of me says, yeah, at the same time, there are things that I'm sure people will find out at some point later down the line that are still like these attacks that come in that I'm dealing with. And I think, okay, so that part of my life hasn't changed. But I've changed in the way that it doesn't have to define me or take me out of the game, right? It might for a few days, it might for a week or two, sometimes depending on how big the hits are, but I've been able to figure out this ability to say, I'll heal in time, God will heal me in time, and these things, so it doesn't really matter that much. So I am in a weird place right now because I'm overloaded with work and projects and I haven't quite figured out where to make my balances. And I think, how did I get to this place again? Because I'm feeling that mountain of stress that I felt back after Chris was killed, not grief wise, but I would say like, you know, 2 or 3 years in where I wasn't managing things as well as I want. So that's a repeated thing. I'm not managing things as well as I wanted, but it's a week instead of a year. Right. And I'm going, okay, I recognize this. I know how to do this. I just need to take a break. I need to, you know, reorganize. And so I think it's interesting to me that you asked that today because I would have probably said a few weeks ago, I'm amazing. And today I'm like, oh, I'm always going to be some part of me is going to be a mess. But I do feel pretty good about the way that I know how to cope with it. And one of the primary ways to cope with it is to find some time to play, find some time to check out, and you come back 10 times more effective, efficiently. In 7 years, so that is a really great question because on the one hand, my normal response is I've decided to not ever feel like I can predict anything anymore. And that's sort of a protective mechanism, a realistic mechanism, that kind of thing. But I look at it and I think my kids will be out of the house, which will be really different for me. And I will have a different, maybe sort of freedom depending on what they're doing. And, you know, if, who knows, right? If they're playing sports or something, and I'm sure I'd like to go see some of their games or whatever. If they're not in college,
you're going
to
want to move to wherever they are.
Yeah, but I'm not going to. That's the thing.
If I wasn't married, I probably would have.
I know you would have an apartment. Oh, you totally would. And you know what? And Hunter would love it. And you wouldn't be like all up in his business, but you'd just be there for him to hang out with, right?
I guarantee you, he wouldn't have a boot on his leg right now from not going to the hospital on time.
Oh God, when you said boot, dude, I immediately thought of the prison anklet. I was like, what the hell?
No,
okay.
Please,
yeah.
Lord, no.
What do they call those? They call
the ankle bracelet.
Yeah, but I thought it was. Anyways, the boot from breaking his foot or something?
What did he do? He stepped on glass several weeks ago, never got it taken out, and now it's so far in there, they need it to come out on its own, and they put a special boot on him so he doesn't put pressure on it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
what are you doing?
Yeah, because you talk to him all the time. Why didn't he tell you this?
Yeah, go to the doctor. Well, yeah. When I saw him last week, he was limping. I said, why are you limping? He goes, well, a few weeks ago. I'm like, Hunter, you have to make better decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that you're making good grades. And that's the overall goal here. But you need to make better decisions.
For your health. Yeah. That's awesome. That's important. I know. That's funny. But I feel like I remember my son was saying the other day, he's like, well, this is actually like a year ago, maybe. I don't know. But one of my friends was like, dude, you know what he sort of said to me? He goes, I know people always say that you're going to get sick of your mom. He goes, but I don't really think so. Like, I actually just like hanging out with her. Like, just as a person, you know? And I was like, oh, that's so nice. I know. And so he's really good about that stuff. And I feel like my daughter and I are the same. We just didn't have the occasion to say that. And it's different sometimes with, I don't know. Who knows? I can't predict it was what I was going to say. Cause I feel like I'm really close with both of them, but I want them to live their own lives, but who knows what happens. And, I do think that I'll be in a place though, where I'll like, maybe I'll be able to work out more, you know what I mean? And maybe I'll be able to, and I could make time. I don't make as much time as I want to, but I'm just saying like, I feel they're always going to be first while I have them. They're always going to be first. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that I self-sacrifice. I'm just saying it's the work and them, and I choose not to. I could easily go work out if I wanted to, but I usually have something. Anyway, longer and involved story, but yeah.
Somebody asked me not too long ago how you were doing, and they said, she always seems so busy. And I said, that's relative because, yes, she's super busy, but she purposely takes so much time out for her children that it's perfect.
Yeah.
You know,
like, it's got what I do. Yeah.
Yeah. To you, it's very busy.
Yep.
But to her, she's doing what she needs to do.
Yeah.
And to her kids, she's doing what she needs to. Like, she is managing her time how she needs to do it. And I think that that's beautiful that you can, with all of the outside noise going on, everybody pulling at you in every way that you, that they do, you're like, you put that wall up and you're like, okay, my kids are first and foremost.
Yeah.
And then I'll do other stuff.
It is interesting because I do, so they're at different time schedules and stuff. So like we do a lot of, it's not just one trip to drop and pick up and but I always do the drop-offs and the pickups and everything. And so during those hours when they're at school, it's like a crazed maniac trying to like get work stuff and, you know, just pound, you know, get stuff done because I do, when I pick them up, not want to be doing that. And then they have sports and activities and dinner. And, you know, then I'm like, oh my God,
I'm going to pass out. Is he driving?
Not yet, permit, but not actual license. Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was driving.
Not yet, close. I probably sent you a picture of him driving, but it's his permit.
Is he going to drive her when he?
He will. He can. Okay. He's really good. I think he's a better driver than I am already. but the thing is that that will change things. I know that'll be a cool change, but I need to sleep because sometimes it's like, okay, I really do. Like I still literally lay down with them before they go to sleep or whatever, you know, just because we're talking about stuff. Yeah. I don't know. And it's just different because I don't have a husband waiting for me in the bed either. You know what I mean? So I do that. And so then by the time, you know, I'm up before him and I'm bed after, but then I'll fix some other things. Okay. So set all that aside I just learned the coolest thing. Enneagrams. Have you ever done that? Right.
I'm not diagnosed ADD, but I'm definitely ADD.
Yes.
And I can't finish it.
Yeah. The test?
Yeah. And I like too many different things. It only lets you choose one. And I'm like, no, I need a top
three. Okay. I think I already know what you are then. Because there's one personality type on there and it's mine and we're afraid to commit to one because we like more. Yeah. And there's, you know.
I can't.
Yeah. So, okay. I'll send you a really simple fast test that I did that I could focus on. But one of the things that is true about this number is that I adventure, new adventure, the more the better. If I'm stressed, like I want to focus on something fun. And so, or something that's interesting or get my mind in something that interests me rather than sit in pain. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that explains so much about why I've put so much on my plate since the day Chris died. And I still had to deal with the pain and I had to find the ways in the different, you know, alternative kinds of therapies with EMDR and so as muscle release and ETTIA and I mean, you know, acupuncture, whatever, you name it. We've experienced a really, we've had really good results with it. But I do realize that the parameters I have to put on that are to realize that that's going to be my tendency. And so I need to shut it off and be healthy. I can shut it off for my kids, but I have to even after that shut it off for me to be healthy, right? So I was just...
Because if you're giving too much of yourself, it's not going to be healthy.
Right, because I do a lot for free. That's actually the biggest thing is that my heart says... So I run the foundation for free and then I'll do speaking stuff sometimes for free. I try not to do too much of that because if they're usually not during, because it's usually not during the time that they're in school.
That's the biggest thing I try to explain to people is if you or if it's Marcus, whoever is taking time and I know that it's going to bless your organization.
Yes.
But it's taking away from his or family. Her family. Mm-hmm.
It is. It's there. I heard it said so well one time when they said, every yes I give you is a no I give my family.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, that's like, that makes it very succinct and clear. But I, so I think that's the... The thing I'm wondering about and I have to pay attention to is my heart will always say help. And so I sometimes will plan so much of that because I'll look at the calendar and go, oh, I can fit that in there, forgetting that I've committed to write a book and do a jewelry line and do all of these other things. And then all of a sudden when those times come, I'm like, you know, ready to
get pressure.
Yeah, crack because I just didn't do it well enough. So I do like to have a lot of things going at once, so that kind of ADD creative side can go, oh, I've got a little adventure here.
Multitasking.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that. Okay, so fun tip. Do you know it's physiologically not possible?
Really?
To multitask? Your brain cannot do two things at once, which is why burn victims, they're putting like these really elaborate games on in goggles because the brain can't do two things at once. It can't feel even pain. Feel the pain, but it has to be so elaborate that it sucks them in enough to kind of.
That's
so what we're doing is we're bouncing back and forth. So like if I'm talking to you and I'm kind of paying attention to the dog on the floor, right? My brain's actually bouncing back and forth. So the more we multitask, the more ADD we get because we're training our brain to do it more.
Yeah, that's not
but
good.
The more ADD you are, the more you multitask. And so it's like a very vicious cycle.
I pride myself on being a professional multitasker.
You are, but you're brilliant at it, right? But if you realize you're tired at the end of the day, one of the things you can try, and I try it sometimes, is you'll have to leave your phone in another room. You have to leave it in another room and then say, okay, I'm going to focus on this for 20 minutes and set a timer and see if you can do it. You probably feel like you're going to lose your mind.
Yeah.
Because you'd feel like you're missing something.
I check my emails when I go to bed.
Yeah.
And I check my emails when I wake up. Uh-huh. And for some reason, there are always emails when I go to bed.
Of course there are, because you're busy.
And when I wake up, and I wake up before the sun rises.
Yeah, that's because you also have a million things. And also a million people to help. Like if somebody says, Melanie, can you help us? You're like, yes. When? Who knows? I'll just get it done. You're good at emails, though. Emails and voicemails I suck at. And I just left a new voice recording on my voicemails. It said, full disclosure, I suck at getting back to people on voicemail. Leave one if you want, but if you really want to get a hold of me, text me.
Like, I need to do that.
Well, I just was like, I feel bad for people because I'm really bad about emails and they probably think I'm in voicemails, but
I always check emails, but I never check voicemails. Yeah. Don't even leave a voicemail for me.
Okay, there's a meme that you need to do. It says like, hi, it's Melanie. I haven't checked my voicemail since 2005.
Right?
You know, whatever. That's probably your
since a flip phone.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Go ahead and
leave one if you want, but I'll never get it.
Oh
so,
my gosh.
I know. It's fun.
Well, I could talk to you all day long.
I know. I could talk to you all day long too.
Is there anything you want to talk about that you have going on, your jewelry or anything?
Yeah. I mean, so we're pretty excited about it and I'll let you know when it comes out, but it's a faith-based jewelry line and I have a faith-based children's book coming. I don't know. I mean, you know, like you said, I'm doing a lot. So if people want to find out, they could go on Instagram or something and find me there and I'll try to keep people updated. But I'm hoping that some of these projects that will be paying gigs will be like start kicking in along with the other stuff. But I mean, honestly, even those, we're always giving percentages away. And I mean, I feel good about it. And I think that's important. I know you guys do the same thing. But yeah, I don't really think so. Although I kind of feel like I want to interview you. Having said that, Andrew's like, we've been here in an hour and a half. We won't. Okay, but what's your craziest fashion trend?
Me?
Yeah, that you've done.
Oh gosh, I'm anti-fashion.
Mm-hmm. But you always look fashionable, so.
I've always been the bum.
Okay, but you're fierce with your shoes. Your shoe collection is...
Yeah, I am, but a lot of it is when Marcus and I first met, he didn't know what to buy me.
Yeah.
And he only bought me shoes.
Really?
For years.
Like stilettos?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's
never
hilarious.
Never
I didn't know that.
I hate stilettos.
Well, I know. I mean, I've seen you at some events wearing them, but the funny thing is I've seen your closet with them in there.
Oh
and
my
it's
gosh,
like,
my closet is fabulous.
Yes. Okay.
It's not a good representation of me.
Right. I know, but I figure you
which
go
is
to
why
some...
I have a really badass Poshmark.
Oh. Okay, you're going to have to teach me how to do that. Actually, I do need to know how to do that. Is there like a handle for you on that?
I don't even know what it is. It's not my name, but I'm addicted to Poshmark.
Awesome.
I like a bargain.
Oh yeah.
And I like being able to make money. You know, I feel like we've, especially us and like the community that we're in, we're always expected, like you just said, you know, we're always giving percentage back. It is expected of us to work for free.
I know, which is weird.
Which really sucks because before I met Marcus, I was never expected to work
for free.
For free.
Yes, you were allowed to make a living.
But then I'm, you know, I married him and everyone expects him to work for free because he suffered.
Yeah.
I know. And that's really...
It's backward.
I'm a business person and I come from a business family.
Strong business family, yeah.
So I don't understand that.
No. And you know what's interesting? This is good for you to know too. It says in the Bible, pay the workman what the workman is due.
Yeah.
And so if that helps you at all, it's biblical that we are not expected to work for free. Right. We can do a lot of stuff for free and for good, of course.
Right.
But that shouldn't be the expectation that we are, so anybody is supposed to, you know, it's nice. We can do it once in a while, but it shouldn't be the norm, really.
Well, and I do a lot of things
for
free.
You do. You guys do a ton
I don't
of
get
stuff.
Paid. I'm not getting paid right now.
Yeah. Okay, fine. Jesus, I'll pay you, Melanie. No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I'm not, I don't do any of this team ever quit
stuff.
You do
more for people than anybody would ever imagine. Like,
but I do, when I see other people working for free, it makes me mad because I'm like, they are worth
money,
their time. I'm not saying they need to be millionaires or whatever. I'm just saying if you go and spend 5 hours doing something, you're going to expect to get paid for that 5 hours. Why would you expect someone who suffered and that you want them to share their trauma?
Yeah.
To do it for free.
Yeah, because you do get emotionally wasted after you share your trauma.
I have a very hard time with that.
Because you see outside of yourself.
Well, and I think it is because I come from a family that creates businesses. And I have a day job, people.
Yeah,
exactly. I actually have a day job. Yeah. And I get paid for that day job.
Yeah.
But
there's value. You've seen how they are able to accumulate, you know, wealth and make smart business decisions because it's business. Like their decisions. It's a non-emotional contractual exchange that makes sense. And so why is that not the truth over here?
Right.
I think that's the
point. I have a hard time with that with military. It's very expected with military people, especially that have suffered, whether it's physical trauma.
Yeah, I know, it's weird.
Or emotional trauma.
And they didn't get paid a lot in the military either, by the way.
Fuck no.
Yeah, so.
And I mean, sorry, I cuss too much, but.
I think you really didn't cuss that much, unless it's just because I cuss a lot. I don't know.
But I mean, we have the Team Never Quit Speakers Bureau. I mean, you obviously know that. But for the listeners out there, we get so many requests for Taya, for Chad Fleming, for different people to leave their home, to go to another state, spend the night, and go spend time with people for free.
Yeah.
Just think about that. Yeah. If you're the one asking, I'm not trying to shame you. I'm just saying, think about it.
Yeah.
Think about what you're asking.
Because a lot of people don't like to travel an overnight or two nights is a big deal.
Yeah.
For a lot
and they're
people.
Like, it's just one night and they'll have fun. We're going to make it fun for them. No, it's actually.
It's work.
It's work. Yeah. And their child that's home that's with a sitter doesn't think that that's fun.
That's true.
So it's. That's something I've never addressed publicly, but I do have a resentment.
Yeah.
So I'm just gonna let that out.
Here it is.
And show you I do hold that resentment to people, and I know people don't think about it, and that's I guess why I want to address it because it is something that people need to realize before they not only ask but sometimes get mad at the answer no.
Yeah. The mad part is uncalled for.
Don't get mad.
Yeah.
Like,
I won't be mad at you if you don't volunteer at my next event.
Right. You know? If I'm going to ask you to take off of work and come help me with my garden, I'm not going to get pissed
say no. Do you know I would die? Like, that's the other thing. When my kids are in college, we are gardening.
Like you, I have a million things that I want to do for me.
I know.
And one of that is this big, like, outdoor lifestyle brand I would love to be able to harvest my own tea and do that line. It's still in my head. Yep. I really want to do it, but I want to do it under this one big brand.
Okay.
Yep. I just, one day.
You'll get it. All the pieces are kind of like, it's like you're, what's that, Plinko or whatever, where it goes like this. I feel like sometimes that's life. Like, they're still coming down the pike and they're going to settle and then it's going to be like,
One day.
Watch out. Mm-hmm. It'll happen. And I saw the chapel pulling in, and I was like, you might have something like that going one day,
too. Oh, my gosh. One day, if I could get that. They just want so much money for it, and I can't afford it. But
well,
one day.
One day. One day. Or you can build your own. You know what I mean?
So my therapy is gardening.
Me too. Yep.
Or traveling, which
me too.
With kids, it's so hard. You right. have to work around their schedules.
Yeah.
So gardening is my thing.
So we'll garden and travel.
But speaking of therapy, yeah. and I think this will be helpful for other okay. people. I've met your therapist.
Yeah.
And I love her yes. so much. Do you want to share that like method at all?
You're talking about Lana?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So ETTIA is what it is, like echo, tango, tango. What's the I?
I don't know. Igloo?
Igloo? Well, sure, let's go know. With that. A alpha, whatever that is. I usually, it's so funny, I'm like T like Tom. I mean, I don't know the military. Yeah.
G impressive. Like God.
Yeah, like God. F like faith. Yeah. J like Jesus. Yeah, anyway, it's pretty cool. It's really cool stuff, but it's all sort of brain pathway stuff. And so instead of having to talk about your trauma, which just has you relive it and relive it, you use your eye movements. And for her, that ETTIA, it's an organization. You can look for your zip code, but you look at different colors and they expand and contract. And it's a diagnostic tool to what emotion is actually causing you the most pain. And I just find the way that our brains are, it's all scientific based. It's, you can look at brain mapping and figure it out. It's the coolest stuff. And it's so non-threatening. It's just, mm-hmm. you're looking at colors in different ways and your eyes will do the work. They'll expand them or contract them and tell you what your problem is. And I freaking love that stuff. But she moved to Austin.
Oh, she did.
Mm-hmm. So you got to go to Austin to see her now. Every once in a while she comes back to my area, but.
Well, awesome. Thanks yeah. for spending the day with yeah. us.
Thank you for having me and yeah. bringing me down to Houston.
Yeah. Andrew, all right.
That's a wrap.
Hey, guys. We know that uncertainty comes in many forms in military life. Unexpected changes in duty stations, sudden deployments. And we've all faced tough challenges individually. But right now, we're actually facing some together. Navy Federal Credit Union knows their members are going to face these times head on. And at Navy Federal Credit Union, they want you to know that they have your back. Because uncertain times call for reliable service, and no matter what, they remain committed to serving all of their members all of the time. Which means their branches are going to remain open as long as possible, and the safety of their members, employees, and communities will always be their first priority. You'll be able to get in touch with their world-class member service. Whether you're on a ship or ashore, at home or abroad, they'll have their customers back like they have for 87 years in good times and in bad. That's why they've been named one of the best military credit unions by U.S. News & World Report. They serve active duty, veterans, and their families. And at Navy Federal Credit Union, their members are the mission, insured by NCUA. All right, guys, it is time for a listener story. You guys, share your stories on the website. We read them, and it's awesome. Let's jump into this week's, which is written in by Brian. His story is titled, My Experience, Strength, and Hope Through 24 Years as a Firefighter and Paramedic. I've been wanting to do this for quite some time, but didn't have the guts. Well, that's my nickname. I want to first tell you how grateful I am for all of the Team Never Quit and your podcast. You have played a huge part in me becoming the man I am today. I've been a full-time firefighter and paramedic since July 3rd, 1995. And I was also in the crash and salvage crew on the USS Forrestal from 88 to 90. I've had a career of seeing and experiencing many awful things over the years, but I'm just focusing on three events. In 2001, on Father's Day, 10 minutes after my 6-year-old daughter left the station, I had to respond to and treat a 7-year-old girl whose mother murdered her by suffocating her with a pillow. Fast forward to 2013. I was involved in a shooting where the shooter was waiting in the woods for us. He was shot, but lived, by police department, and fortunately the rifle jammed due to wrong ammo when he pointed it my way while squeezing the trigger. I, along with many other first responders, are very good at helping others. But speaking for myself, I have always sucked at helping myself. There were many, many other bad calls, along with 2 divorces and a tornadic path of destruction left behind me. My only tool I knew to turn the volume down in my life was alcohol. Then I tore my rotator cuff in 2015 after battling with a confused combative head injury patient. Due to the 4 anchors I needed to repair it, I was going to be out of work for 6 months, and I began fine-tuning the skills for my one tool. I always was treading water with the PTS booze before this, but it was more like trying to push a beach ball underwater. I began to rapidly become even more hollowed until I hit my bottom and surrendered on December 1st, 2017. I immersed myself in AA, began having a relationship with God again, and the journey to rediscover myself had begun. I'm blessed to have found this podcast in those early dark days because you all have given me strength beyond words. I've been sober over 2 years now and am very involved in my program. I'm also very involved on a CISM team and am very involved in peer support. I've found a new passion in trying to help veterans in my field. Any and all advice is encouraged, and will continue to learn more. Most of all, I will never quit, and thank you for all you do. There is so much more to my story, but thank you for the ability to share a fraction of it. Be safe and be well, Brian. Oh man, that was a great interview, and I'm not a crier normally. Normally is the key word there, because this interview was really, really powerful.
I feel like I'm setting this pattern of very sad.
Yeah, what the heck?
Like emotional interviews, and that's not my goal at all. But I know. But I don't know. I'm a total empath, and when I can see someone's feelings, I cry. So I'm sorry for everybody listening that all of my interviews that I've done have been extremely emotional, or at least I've gotten extremely emotional in them. So everybody can pretty much call me a big wimp, probably true. But yeah, that was super powerful. You definitely get a glimpse of Taya in a more intimate way, a behind the scenes way, because normally, like you said earlier, she does an incredible job speaking. She's been on the Patriot Tour with us for years since it started. And she's a very powerful speaker, but you never get that like emotion, the raw emotion out of her speeches. So
yeah, not like this interview. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this interview is just really good and she gets super raw and I love it.
Yeah. Taya, thanks again for sharing your story with us. We love you. We can't wait to be able to see you again because we miss human interaction, you know?
I know, but I love Taya's post. I mean, if you don't follow Taya on social media, please go follow her pages. She's such an inspiration on social media and she just pours her heart out. And it's really cool to see how she uses that platform.
Yeah. Well, if you loved this episode, please do yourself a favor. Do us a favor. Share the episode with a friend. We drop new episodes every single Wednesday. And we love that you guys listen and follow the show. It really helps us out a lot. It means a lot to us that our stories and the stories that we share make an impact in your life. Make sure you subscribe. We're on Apple Podcasts, any other major podcast player. If you want to follow us on social media, you can check us out at team_neverquit. Can't wait to come back with another episode. We will see you guys next week.
See ya.